Welcome to iFarmRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFarmRx. And as we all know, many, perhaps most patients with type 2 diabetes will eventually need insulin therapy. Over the past two decades, insulin analogs have dominated the insulin marketplace, and long-acting so-called peakless basal insulins are frequently used as the initial add-on therapy when oral agents are simply not enough. But should they be? Or should we turn to NPH insulin more often? What are the real-world outcomes of using NPH? Well, a study recently published in June 2018 in the Journal of the American Medical Association caught my eye because it reports 10 years of data in a very large health system. Well, joining me to talk about the design and the results of this study are Janie Patel and Regina Arellano from the Midwestern University Chicago College of Pharmacy. Doctors Patel and Arellano practice at the Advocate Medical Group Outpatient Internal Medicine Clinics. And they wrote a commentary for iFarmRx entitled, "Maybe Old is Gold. Newer insulins may not always be better, just more expensive." Well, Janie, Regina, thanks for joining us on the iFarmRx podcast.
Thank you for this opportunity, Stuart.
Hi, Stuart. Looking forward to the discussion.
So before we get started, I want you to imagine you're seeing GR, a 63-year-old Asian female who has type 2 diabetes. She was diagnosed with diabetes about 5 years ago, but is otherwise healthy. She's not had any complications related to diabetes and has never been hospitalized. After using metformin and sitagliptin for the past 3 years, the patient was started on a GLP-1 receptor agonist about 3 months ago. Her A1C at that time was 9.1%, and the primary care physician felt that the GLP-1 receptor agonist was probably the best option in order to promote weight loss. However, the patient has not been able to tolerate the GLP-1RA due to persistent nausea. The primary care physician has referred the patient to you to initiate basal insulin therapy. A patient checks her blood glucose every morning and records her readings in a logbook. And looking at the data, you see that indeed most of her readings are in the 160 to 200 range, with occasional readings above 200. And her lowest reading in the past month has been 137. She weighs 187 pounds, is 5'1" tall. Her blood pressure today was 122 over 70, and she states she'd like to lose weight and has been trying to cut back on starchy foods. She has a pedometer and tries to walk at least 7,500 steps a day. She has health insurance and a prescription drug plan, but the copays on brand name medications are pretty high at $50. So before we talk about the study you reviewed for iFarmRx, can you tell us a little bit about some of the things going through your mind in this case? What additional information might you want to collect and assess during this encounter? And what are the options you'd be considering at this point?
So some of the questions would be to assess her history of medication use related to her diabetes management and to assess risk of hypoglycemia so we could set treatment goals for her at this point. And after assessing her risk for hypoglycemia, you know, given that you mentioned she is fairly healthy, no other complications, has only been diagnosed with diabetes for 5 years at this time, in order to set a treatment goal for her, we would assume that her A1C goal would be below 7%, and that would be appropriate. Further, to assess and evaluate this patient's self-management ability, we would like to know if she's had hypoglycemia in the past, at what blood glucose level does she have hypoglycemia symptoms, and does GR know how to manage hypoglycemia? And currently, she's only checking her sugars every morning. Her fasting blood glucose ranges are available for review, but would she be willing to check her blood glucose more than once a day to, for example, assess bedtime blood glucose if we were to start her on insulin therapy in case there's risk for nocturnal hypoglycemia? Further, we would like to assess GR's preferences and identify if there's any cost barriers. So as you mentioned, her health insurance incurs her a copay of $50 for brand name medications. And assuming she's paying a $50 copay for her sitagliptin, which is available just brand name Januvia, would she be willing to pay another $50 copay if an insulin analog product is considered? What would this patient's budget be? Because we also should think about other costs that would come along with insulin therapy, such as cost for pen needles or syringes, let's say, and more blood glucose meter supplies, depending on her coverage. If, based on some of the information, we identify that cost is a major barrier, even though NPH insulin is available in pen devices, we could consider using NPH in a vial form. And would that be feasible for this patient? And also trying to decide between insulin analogs versus NPH, would she be willing to test and inject only once a day or potentially twice daily for NPH?
Stuart, I would like to assess GR's current lifestyle habits and also her willingness to incorporate modifications to minimize risk of hypo and weight gain. I would like to know about her current meal planning, maybe assess if she has a regular, consistent schedule of meals and snacks throughout the day, or does she often skip meals? This would help in minimizing the risk of hypoglycemia. Also, recognizing that GR wants to lose weight and may be concerned about weight gain with insulin, I would want to assess her motivation to follow a healthy eating plan, which could offset weight gain and possibly help with weight loss. We would advise consult with a dietitian to help with lifestyle modifications. And finally, also to prevent weight gain, I would want to assess any limitations with regards to physical activity. How much physical activity is she currently engaged in per week and what type? Maybe find out what she likes to do for fun, and can any of that be used to increase her weekly physical activity? So based on the information obtained, some treatment options to consider for GR include starting with NPH. We would start with a once daily injection and then titrate to twice daily if necessary. If we go the insulin analog route, we would prefer insulin glargine over insulin detemir due to insulin glargine's smoother peak action profile and duration of at least 24 hours. In order to minimize cost, if patient is willing to check her postprandial blood glucose, we could assess whether there is a need for the sitagliptin and potentially soon after initiating insulin, discontinuing sitagliptin.
So, Gina, if you had to briefly summarize in just a few sentences the study entitled, and this is a mouthful, Association of Initiation of Basal Insulin Analogs versus Neutralized Protamine Hagedorn Insulin with Hypoglycemia-Related Emergency Department Visits or Hospital Admissions and with Glycemic Control in Patients with Type 2 Diabetes, to someone who hasn't read the paper, what would you say?
Well, so the study was a retrospective observational study, and it was conducted to compare specific hypoglycemia-related events and glycemic control among patients with type 2 diabetes who are either prescribed long-acting insulin analogs, which included insulin glargine or detemir, or NPH insulin. They used data from a large integrated healthcare delivery system, Kaiser Permanente of Northern California, and identified over 25,000 patients initiated on basal insulin therapy between 2006 and 2015. The study excluded patients with type 1 diabetes and those on a basal bolus insulin regimen. The primary outcome was the time to hypoglycemia-related emergency department visit or hospital admission after initiation of either an insulin analog or NPH, while the secondary outcome was a change in A1C level. During an average follow-up of 1.7 years, there was no significant difference in the primary outcome between insulin analogs and NPH. For the secondary outcome, reduction in A1C was larger in the NPH group.
So, Janie, what do you believe are the key strengths and weaknesses of the study? And are there any potential confounders present in the study that you believe may have impacted the results?
So, Stuart, we believe there were two main strengths of this study. One of them being inclusion of a large cohort representative of real-world data, And to minimize confounders, the researchers also compared patients from the insulin analog group with a similar number of propensity-matched NPH users to ensure that the results reported addressed and were adjusted for any covariates that were identified. There are, however, several weaknesses of this study, which do make it challenging to extrapolate the findings to all patients. First off, patients included in this study had poorly controlled diabetes with average A1C of 9.4% at baseline, and they may have had relatively lower risk of hypoglycemia compared to patients with better controlled type 2 diabetes. And with the same token, study results can't be applied to patients with type 1 diabetes or those requiring basal bolus insulin regimens as they were excluded. In regards to outcomes, the study did not assess for differences in nocturnal hypoglycemia or other hypoglycemia events which could have occurred without triggering use of healthcare. To us, this is a weakness because in clinical practice, we would assess patients for these symptoms and modify their regimen accordingly. Also, they didn't assess for other important outcomes such as quality of life, time in range, and other important hypoglycemia measures. Also, based on the results, patients in each group had an average A1C of 8% at the end of the study period, which indicates that perhaps the approach to reduce A1C wasn't as aggressive, and this may have been because of study population being on NPH and to minimize risk of hypoglycemia. Another concern with the study design was that the results were not reported separately for insulin glargine and insulin detomer, and it would have been interesting to see how this would have impacted results overall and if there were differences among the two. You asked if there is any potential confounders that we believe could have impacted the results, and we do believe that there's a couple of them. Study clinicians were more familiar with prescribing and monitoring patients on NPH. And more than 90% of patients in this study were on NPH. And that's why results may not be extrapolated to other healthcare systems where clinicians may not be as familiar with use of NPH insulin. Also, since this was an observational study, they could not have controlled for all factors that might influence the decision to choose an insulin analog over NPH. So a question many might have is what patient-specific characteristics led the clinicians in the study select an insulin analog over the NPH?
So Gina and Janie, I think many clinicians use long-acting insulin analogs preferentially over NPH insulin because there's a perception that insulin glargine and even insulin detomer and now insulin degludec and the higher concentrations of insulin glargine are more effective and safer than NPH. So is NPH insulin underrated?
Stuart, we do believe that NPH is underrated. NPH insulin is much less expensive, yet prescribed less frequently. Despite of clinically important time-to-action differences between NPH and insulin analogs, including insulin detomer, glargine, and ultra-long-acting insulins, under specific circumstances where cost is a barrier, NPH insulin may be an excellent alternative to long-acting insulin analogs and potentially may be preferred by patients as initial treatment.
And Stuart, this article also highlights the importance of the pharmacist's role in ensuring all clinicians are well-trained on the use of NPH, including patient selection, education, and monitoring.
So I'm wondering, from a formulary management standpoint, should we require NPH to be used first in patients with type 2 diabetes before we authorize the use of an insulin analog?
That's a great question, Stuart. Thus far, including this study, I think we lack robust data to support formulary changes requiring NPH to be used first. It remains unknown whether nocturnal hypoglycemia and hypoglycemia events that didn't trigger healthcare use would increase healthcare costs. It must be recognized that this does impact quality of life for patients and can increase the likelihood of non-adherence to insulin treatment. There's also a lack of data comparing NPH to ultra-long-acting insulins, which have shown to reduce nocturnal hypoglycemia. We realize that ultra-long-acting insulins were not available during this study timeframe. However, this data would be necessary to lead to any formulary changes.
So let's go back to our case. What about GR? Would you recommend that she use NPH? And if so, what dose would you initially prescribe? And how would you go about titrating it?
Well, provided GR's preference, and if there is a lack of great risk for hypoglycemia, and especially if cost is an issue, MPH could definitely be considered and recommended first. So given her weight and current A1C, I would start her on 0.2 units per kilogram per day, which is 18 units, and I would do that as a single evening injection. Then I would titrate by 10 to 15% or 2 to 4 units every 1 to 2 weeks and gradually increase to twice daily injections if needed. Now, if she experiences hypoglycemia, I would decrease that dose by 4 units or by 10 to 20%.
And just to add, we would recommend early and frequent follow-up to ensure appropriate use and minimize risk of hypoglycemia for GR. Additionally, she should be educated on appropriate use of NPH. So, for example, mixing before use, administration technique, including best injection site, storage, expiration, and disposal, and even recommending a bedtime snack if she were to experience hypoglycemia. But overall, we do believe that GR is an appropriate candidate for NPH insulin therapy, and it could be considered first line for her from cost benefits as well as from glycemic control standpoint.
So I want to thank you both, Janie and Regina, for joining us today to discuss the use of MPH insulin in patients with type 2 diabetes. I think it's clear from your comments that MPH is probably underused, and there are plenty of patients who we could consider using MPH, particularly if there's cost issues involved, which frankly is any health system, right? So we should be thinking about MPH as one of the potential options to use with patients. And what we need to figure out is who's well suited for MPH versus well suited for using some of the insulin analogs. Well, tell us what you think. Should we be recommending the use of MPH insulin more often? Should all patients be required to use MPH insulin before using an insulin analog? Are there times when an insulin analog really should be used preferentially? Well, tell us what you think. Remember, only iFormRx members can leave comments and access our growing list of resource pages. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free, so sign up today. And be sure to sign in every time you visit. Until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.